is Thursday, December 14th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, British Prime Minister Theresa May arrives in Brussels for further talks on Brexit after she experienced a defeat on the issue by fellow MPs.
It will be a parliamentary decision that endorses the grounds on which the UK will depart from the EU.
This week's Democratic victory in Alabama could signal a resurgence for that party next year, and we meet an undocumented immigrant who's working as an actor in Hollywood. It's all ahead. British Prime Minister Theresa May arrived in Brussels Thursday to take part in an EU summit after suffering a parliamentary setback with British lawmakers demanding a say on any agreement to leave the European Union before March 29, 2019. Parliament narrowly approved an amendment Wednesday to that effect, including several members of Ms. May's own ruling Conservative Party.
I'm sure you want to hear the result to make sure it is correct. The ayes to the right, 309. The noes to the left, 305. The ayes have it, the ayes have it. Unlock!
The vote raises questions whether the Prime Minister, already weakened by a poor result in snap elections in June, can push through an agreement before the deadline. She reached an interim deal last week that includes Britain's financial settlement, the Irish border with Northern Ireland, and the rights of Europeans in Britain, with European Commission Chief Jean-Claude Juncker proclaiming sufficient progress to move to phase two. Bruce Wilson, a professor at the EU Centre at Australia's RMIT University, tells International Edition's Victor Beattie the Parliament's vote was a humiliation for Ms. May and her coalition government.
It is never good for a government to lose a vote on the floor of Parliament. And this is one particular vote which has been the subject of enormous lobbying and efforts by the government's whips to get all of their supporters, to all of their parliamentary members to support the legislation. So the fact that some dozen of them have voted against the government is a very significant defeat for the government.
It was a narrow defeat, 309 to 305. This was an amendment actually put forth by a member of the Conservative Party. Just what did it say?
Its specific effect is to require the eventual deal between the United Kingdom and the EU over the exit of the UK from the EU to Parliament. It will be a parliamentary decision that endorses the grounds on which the UK will depart from the EU.
This vote appears to show a divided country.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think it's been a divided country for quite some time, and indeed the vote over Brexit, 52-48, whilst a significant win by those who advocated the Leave campaign, 52-48 demonstrates alone that it's very divided. And when you look at very significant parts of the UK, like London, were even more strongly in favour of remaining in the EU, Scotland strongly in favour of remaining in the EU, Northern Ireland strongly in favour of remaining in the EU. You just get a sense of just how significant this defeat has been. And I think one of the things that's been said in this last 24 hours is that the 48% who voted to stay in the EU have been really neglected, ignored in the last 18 months or so. And this is one way of saying we are Britons too. You need to pay attention to what we think.
How have they been ignored?
The focus has been on what's referred to colloquially as the hard Brexit. And whilst business and the Chancellor and some key members of the Conservative government have argued for what's similarly called a soft Brexit, the general pressure has been towards breaking with the UK's participation in the single market. That will cause enormous economic disruption. In July this year, 60% of British people said in an opinion poll that they wish to retain an EU passport. Now, this kind of simple naivety demonstrates just how confused the campaign over the UK's relationship with the EU is, and yet the current UK government pushes steadily toward an exit from the EU without any attention to these issues.
That is Bruce Wilson. He's a professor at the EU Center at Australia's RMIT University. Prime Minister May will urge the EU to approve her initial agreement to end more than 40 years of union, the first country to leave, and allow the discussions to move on to trade talks in March and security and defense matters afterwards. The EU is expected to give its blessing to that on Friday. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. So, Andrew, what's trending?
Well, a big vote today here in Washington, D.C. could set the pace for technology access, not just in the U.S., but really around the world as one of the pace setters globally. The Federal Communications Commission is set to vote today on a proposal to repeal rules governing net neutrality. Right now, internet companies and the government treat all internet traffic equally. So you, for example, don't have to pay more money to use YouTube or Netflix or download large files. The proposal being considered today would rescind that equality and would allow internet companies to potentially make certain websites faster or slower than others. This is something that has been hotly debated for months on social media. Really, it's been debated as long as social media has been around, as long as the internet's been around. This has been an issue that's been talked about. But particularly leading up to the vote today, it's a trending topic, hashtag net neutrality trending, as people are talking about it. And the people who are arguing that net neutrality needs to stay in place say that it keeps the internet access open and that changing those rules will change the open flow of information. There's an example that a lot of people give saying that an internet service provider that has their own streaming service or their own video service could speed up that service and make other services like YouTube slower in order to promote their own products. So many online companies, eBay, Twitter, Amazon, Microsoft, are all in support of net neutrality. They've been using social media to try to rally their customers and fans to try to contact their representatives and urge them to support net neutrality. Opponents of the regulations say that net neutrality discourages competition for companies to have better and cheaper internet access. The idea is that if there's less regulation, there's more incentive to invest. You can get cheaper, faster internet and kind of a race to the cheapest, which would, they say, benefit consumers. And not surprisingly, you see a lot of the companies that would potentially benefit from that opposed to net neutrality. So companies like AT&T, Verizon, Nokia, all of these companies that provide internet say that they want it to be not open, but something that they can indeed maybe do more innovation and charge some different prices for. The rules are going to be voted on. It's going to be interesting to see if this is the final say, how much of it is impacted and how quickly it goes into effect. And then if people see an actual change, of course, in that example I mentioned, that's the concern that things will start to slow down or, you know, YouTube and Netflix will be blocked. That's something that I don't think is going to happen. It's pretty unlikely that that will happen, but there may be some changes. And then, like I said at the top of the segment, will this impact global internet usage? The U.S. sets the pace for a lot of this stuff. We'll see if other companies are affected by this as well.
Yeah, should be very interesting.
Yes.
All right. Thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. Russian President Vladimir Putin rejects allegations of Russian meddling in the U.S. election. China accuses the U.S. of meddling over potential U.S. Navy visits to Taiwan. A human rights group claims Kenyan police raped and beat civilians during the election season. And as we heard, the U.S. is set to vote on dismantling internet regulation. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA's Saturn space probe Cassini, which was sent to its fiery death in September, revealed a number of secrets about the mysterious ringed planet. Now, several months after Cassini's demise, a new study led by scientists at the Swedish Institute of Space Physics in Uppsala have found that there's a strong electrical and chemical connection between Saturn and its rings. The findings were made from data gathered by a Swedish-developed Langmuir probe that flew on the Cassini spacecraft. The Langmuir probe is a device that measures the temperature, electron density, and speed of the electrically charged gas called plasma. Probe data was gathered this past April and September when the spacecraft was sent through a series of dips through the narrow gap between the planet's innermost D ring and its atmosphere. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Sri Lanka joins the Mine Ban Treaty. The national political landscape here in the U.S. appears to have shifted in the wake of Tuesday's Senate election victory by Democrat Doug Jones in heavily Republican Alabama. Jones defeated controversial Republican candidate Roy Moore, who had the backing of President Donald Trump. In the wake of Jones's victory, Democrats are more confident about success in next year's congressional midterm elections, and Republicans are looking for a way to rebound. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more from Washington.
In Alabama, jubilant supporters of Democrat Doug Jones celebrate his victory over Republican Roy Moore.
This campaign has been about the rule of law. This campaign has been about common courtesy and decency and making sure everyone in this state, regardless of which zip code you live in, is going to get a fair shake in life.
Moore was unable to overcome allegations of sexual misconduct stemming back decades, involving several women who were teenagers at the time, while Moore was in his 30s. But Moore did not concede the race.
As we've been painted in an unfavorable and unfaithful light, we've been put in a hole, if you will, and it reminds me of a passage in Psalm 40. I waited patiently for the Lord. That's what we've got to do.
President Trump said Wednesday at the White House he had hoped for a different result.
Yeah, I wish we would have gotten the seat. A lot of Republicans feel differently. They're very happy with the way it turned out. But I would have, as the leader of the party, I would have liked to have had the seat. I want to endorse the people that are running.
Jones won in part because of a strong Democratic turnout, especially by African Americans. Moore was hurt by a depressed Republican turnout and a write-in campaign that drained away Republican votes. Democrats were excited to pull off a win in deeply Republican Alabama, including Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer.
So you put all that together, base being energized, millennials overwhelmingly Democratic, suburbs swinging back to the Democrats, and it means that things are looking good for us.
Jones's victory is sure to send political shockwaves as both parties look ahead to next year's congressional elections, says analyst Larry Sabato.
If I were running Republican campaigns for Senate, for House, for governor, for state legislature, I'd be really, really worried because there appears to be a wave building and it has a giant D on it, D for Democrat.
Meanwhile, Trump continues to struggle with low approval rating. Losing a Senate seat could make it more difficult for Republicans to govern, says expert Molly Reynolds.
We see that Republicans, once Jones is seated, will now have a 51 instead of 52 seat majority in the Senate. And we've seen time and again over the course of the year that they have trouble governing with just 52 seats. And those challenges won't get easier when they lose one of those senators.
House and Senate Republican leaders said Wednesday they have now agreed on a final version of a tax reform bill, a key campaign promise of the president. Republicans hope to finish work on the tax cut plan before Jones is sworn in as a senator next month. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Sri Lanka has become the 163rd country to join the mine ban treaty, which prohibits the use, production, stockpiling, and transfer of this weapon the nations have deemed as barbaric. Campaigners say Sri Lanka's accession to the treaty will boost efforts to create a mine-free world by 2025. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Campaigners hope Sri Lanka's accession to the mine ban treaty will inspire the last three South Asian holdouts, Pakistan, Nepal, and India, to join the convention. Firoz Alizada is campaigns and communications manager of the International Campaign to Ban Landmines. He tells VOA Sri Lanka's decision to join the convention adds to the global stigma against landmines and will help reduce the number of civilian casualties within the country from this inhumane and indiscriminate weapon.
This decision would hopefully help Sri Lanka to speed up and clear and destroy those landmines, and also provide assistance to that significant number of landmine victims in the country.
Alizada says landmines have killed and maimed more than 22,000 people in Sri Lanka over the years. The Landmine Monitor 2017, which was published Thursday, says Myanmar and Syria were the only countries that used landmines during the past year. Alizada says neither state is party to the treaty.
The Myanmar armed forces used landmines on the country's border with Bangladesh, which we have condemned because the landmines that were used and they were basically targeting Rohingya fleeing the country. And landmines were also used in Syria.
The Monitor reports more than 8,600 mine casualties last year, including at least 2,089 killed. This is the highest number of annual casualties recorded since 1999. It cites Yemen, Libya, Afghanistan, Myanmar, and Ukraine as the countries with the most casualties. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. A Hollywood actor originally from West Africa recently announced that he's an undocumented immigrant and a recipient of DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program enacted under the Obama administration, allows undocumented immigrants who entered the United States as children to live and work legally in what is meant to be a temporary solution. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has the story of actor Bambajon Bamba and why he's revealing his immigration status now.
Black Panther is not just the latest upcoming comic book superhero film. It is the fulfillment of a dream for Bambajon Bamba.
That's me right there. Boom. I'm the military leader. I wanted to be a part of this movie for years.
As if trying to make it in Hollywood isn't tough enough, Bamba has been living in fear over a secret he has kept until now.
I'm a black immigrant. I'm black and I'm undocumented. there were really a lot of opportunities missed because sometimes I get scripts and offers from outside the country and I can't go. Sometimes there are movies that shoot in Canada and I can't even audition.
The Ivory Coast native is a recipient of Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA. This status means he can legally work in the United States because he and his parents came to the U.S. when he was 10 years old during turbulent times back in Ivory Coast.
The country was divided for a long time. There was a civil war. Thousands of people died.
I have all these sisters from Congo.
Even though he can legally work in the U.S., he's found much of Hollywood to be unfamiliar with DACA.
And they're like, what is DACA? Then I tell them what DACA is. They're like, okay, you know what? Just, do you have a green card? Where is your passport? I'm like, I don't have any of that. All I have is what the government requires for me to work legally. And this is it, and this is it.
The decision to make his immigration status public comes with professional risks. But Bamba says not speaking out. Maybe worse.
I decided, honestly, to share my story now when the administration decided that they wanted to end DACA. So, again, I just knew that there were no other options for me. So either go out fighting or go out in fear.
In September, President Trump said he would end the program and called on Congress to provide a solution. This after a promise he made in February.
We are going to deal with DACA with heart.
Mr. President, you made a promise to the Dreamers. You told us that you would find a solution for us. So we just want to hold you accountable to do that.
A petition asked for Hollywood to support undocumented immigrants such as Bamba.
I think Hollywood could do so much more just because of the power we have in the media to shift the conversation.
One, you've seen it.
Bamba says he did not make his status public because of the Black Panther movie, but it's an added bonus if the film helps amplify his story. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
And that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Around the world, excess and loosely secured stockpiles of small arms, light weapons, and munitions, along with landmines and explosive remnants of war, pose a serious danger not only to local populations, but also to regional stability and prosperity. The dangers posed by mines and UXO can linger for decades, wrote Tina Kidenow, Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for Political Military Affairs. In areas reeling from recent fighting, stabilization and humanitarian assistance efforts are effectively blocked until key sites are cleared of explosive hazards. Civilian populations near contaminated land could face permanent injury or death by performing everyday activities such as accessing clean water or walking to work or school. That is why the U.S. Department of State funds and manages conventional weapons destruction programs in 47 countries around the world. It's To Walk the Earth in Safety report, issued in mid-December by the State Department's Office of Weapons Removal and Abatement, highlights our enduring commitment to make post-conflict communities safer and setting the stage for their recovery and development. It also touches on many of the problems these communities must overcome. In Africa, decades of past conflicts have left behind dense minefields, while porous state borders and weak governments have allowed extremist groups such as Boko Haram and Al-Shabaab to easily arm themselves with weapons and explosives. In East Asia and the Pacific, due to a series of armed conflicts going back to the 1940s, landmines and unexploded ordnance have remained a persistent threat. Similarly, in the Balkans and in Ukraine, minefields and poorly secured stockpiles of weapons are also a cause for concern. In the Middle East and North Africa, efforts at regional stabilization and conflict resolution are hampered by unexploded ordnance and surplus weapons resulting from decades of instability and conflict. The same can be said for Afghanistan and some of its Central Asian neighbors. And in Latin America, conventional weapons destruction is crucial to stem regional threats of violence and weapons trafficking that go hand in hand with illegal narcotics trafficking and criminal violence. Supporting conventional weapons destruction is a cornerstone of our national security policy, said Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary Kaidenow. The success of our programs is built on strong bipartisan support from Congress and the people of the United States, who recognize that our nation benefits from helping to create a world in which all may walk the earth in safety.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States.